Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Okay. Hey, folks, this is Evan. Welcome to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 336, being recorded on June 24th. Today, our special guest is Ryan Hill. We've asked him to come on to talk to us about this new thing called Microsoft Q&A. But before we get to that, Sujit, why don't we go through our news?
Yeah, thanks, Evan. So, yeah, a couple of good news items today, but one of them spent a lot of time on some updates to ARM, or how do you author ARM templates. As you know, that's not the favorite task that anybody does, myself included.
But it's critical.
It's critical. Important.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, there's this big push to consider ARM templates as code, right? Or infrastructure as code, as it's called. So towards that end, Mark Rusinovich announced a bunch of updates in the ARM template authoring system. For example, now you could use Visual Studio Code. You could always do it, but now there's, you know, like highlighting and snippets that you could get in Visual Studio Code and drag them in, right? All the templates are there. So it's an easier authoring facility there. Another thing that was missing in ARM was, you know, you never knew what was going to happen, right? You would just apply the ARM template and then and say, oh, crap, you know, that was the wrong thing. We have to redo it again. But now you could do this what if kind of analysis, right? You can run the ARM template and say, okay, tell me kind of, you know, if I did this, you know, what was the outcome? What was going to happen? And so that's another update.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's super handy.
And then the thing that I'm sure, you know, Evan and Ryan, you guys have done a lot is, you know, running scripts inside of an ARM template. You know how painful it is. Mm-hmm. You got to make a reference to an outside script. Now there's like script blocks. You can easily run some scripts, you know, last minute deployment scripts, the last part of your ARM template typically. And then one kind of thing that they've done is, you know, the provisioning of management groups that typically you could not do inside an ARM template. And so you had to create all these management groups, which is fine if you have a few management groups. But think about a large company that has maybe hundreds of management groups in a fancy hierarchy. It would be a pain in the neck for them to do that using just the AZ command line. So now they could, you know, just kind of, you know, just visualize that and put it inside an ARM template, just like, you know, in a hierarchy like you would normally do, and then apply that ARM template, and it would just magically create all your management groups exactly like you had intended. So I think that's going to be a neat feature as well.
You know, this is great because I can tell you that we're actually doing a push right now, or we're making an effort to utilize ARM templates to be able to replicate certain issues that our customers may be having. So just a way to have, like, think of it as, you know, an advanced file new bootstrap project, but be able to use templates to quickly deploy resources so we don't spend time trying to stand those resources up, but actually spend more time on trying to repo the problem. So it's really great to hear news with ARM templates.
Yeah, we may need to dig into this further at some point so you can get somebody on, because, you know, to Ryan's point, right, ARM templates are far and away one of the most efficient ways to deploy things, you know, and manage it from a DevOps perspective. So yeah. So seeing these kind of improvements, like us investing in this as a kind of a first class is really cool to see.
Yeah, definitely. And then the other thing that the other piece of news said, not a whole lot this week, but the other interesting piece was around ACR or Azure Container Registry. They've done a lot of things to make it more secure. Like typically enterprise customers have had a challenge adopting ACR. And so they've done some things to make it easier for them. One of the things they've done is to use customer managed keys to encrypt the images that are stored in ACR. And so this way, customers will feel better knowing that, okay, you know, it's encrypted with my keys, and therefore it's impossible for somebody else to, even if they do hack into the system, to find out what's in those repositories. Then doing something like private links. Today, they have to apply all these fancy firewall rules to limit certain workloads to get into the ACR instance. And now using private links, you could basically come up, it's an internally routable IP address, essentially, for your ACR. And that goes not through the internet, but through the Azure backbone itself. And therefore, just, makes it much more secure, because it's not possible that ACR will have no public endpoint at all now. It will only be accessible inside.
Yeah, we see this a lot, right? Customers, even though Azure services typically will sit behind public IPs, I mean, that's certainly starting to change with the private link stuff, but a safe Microsoft public IP and an unsafe somebody else's public IP is difficult to tell from a network perspective, right? So flipping to these private IPs, that I hadn't thought about that till you were talking about that, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because now they can just say, hey, if it's a public IP, don't let it go.
Yeah. Right?
If it's a private IP, let it go.
And then, and kind of related to that, the other challenge which customers have had with ACR, as you know, ACR is nothing but a Docker repository server. And there's two parts to it. There is the API that actually queries, what's the repository, or find out images that are stored there and things like that. And then the other part is the actual images themselves, which is a different protocol. That's the data protocol. And today, the actual images themselves are stored in blob storage, whereas when you query the repository for images or try to put or get the versions, that is a different data store. So there's two data stores involved. So the challenge has always been locking down access to that blob repository, because as you know, we don't know where your blob storage can be. And so you typically have to apply this wildcard firewall rule to say, *.blob.core.windows.net, which means pretty much, every storage account in the world, which really doesn't help the security folks. And so now, by using something called a dedicated data endpoints, you can assign a specific data endpoint for your blob storage and now only enable that one through the firewall, right? So this way, the data storage, the data endpoint, is something that you can lock down completely and not have to have this star wildcard like we had before.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
that's cool. I think that's going to make a lot of customers happy, that the fact that that they can have their images sitting at a lockdown endpoint that only they can access for sure.
Yep. So two things I wanted to hit real quick. One, we had Candace Jackson on a couple weeks ago talk about deprecating TLS 1.0. We just announced that Azure Cosmos DB will be starting to enforce 1.2 at the end of July. So it's sort of wanted to reinforce that to folks, right? This is coming. And then the other thing is, we've had this for a couple of years. This has been requested for a number of years, which is for customers to be able to decide when to be able to fail over their Azure storage account and be able to change a read-only side to a read-write. Right, so that they can now be able to leverage that, in a different region, versus historically, right, that was something we on the Microsoft side controlled. And customers wanted to have the flexibility to sort of decide, do I wait for Microsoft to do it globally, or do I want to do it faster or slower, depending on their business case. So given that, so let's, with no further ado, let's kind of, Ryan, let's kick it over to you. If you could introduce yourself and share, what you do for Microsoft, we'll start having a chat about Q&A.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Ryan Hill. I've been in Microsoft for about a year and a half now. So it's been a fantastic ride. I joined the Azure CXP community team. So emphasis on community. We really engage the customers that have questions on MSDN, Stack Overflow, and GitHub. So right now we've been making this push because anybody who's used MSDN knows that.
Which is everybody, right?
Yeah, which is everybody.
Forever.
It's lacking in a couple of features. Let's just say that, to put it mildly. So we as the community team have worked with the teams to bring to the community a brand new first class platform that is deserving of our customers, and that platform is Microsoft Q&A. So we took a lot of the things that works well. So when you look at Stack Overflow, the ability to tag a question to multiple areas, the ability to know where only the original poster of the question can mark an answer as this was relevant and this helped me, to being able to see a threaded view of, you know, of dialogue between, you know, the original poster and the community. So as far as like, you know, has somebody tried this? Have you done that? You know, be able to have that conversational dialogue while not filling up, you know, a single page of just a whole bunch of stuff we have to scroll to see, like, you know, okay, was this answer really relevant or not?
So this sort of sounds like, Ryan, and I absolutely not diminishing the work that y'all have done here, but this sort of sounds like MSDN, well, or Q&A is sort of a modern way of doing this, right? The things you talk about, these views and the tagging, like these have been in other message, you know, forums and other forums for a while now, right? It's just we sort of caught up to the times now and have enabled these capabilities and modernized it. Is that sort of from a high level what y'all were trying to do?
Exactly. Because when you use MSDN, you really have to find a forum that you want to post a question in and then post it. But then sometimes like the question could traverse different areas. So not only that, but you may end the question in the wrong form, and then they have to wait for somebody to say, oh, let me put you over here because this would be a better form for it to get answered. I'm pretty sure that anybody who's posted a question on MSDN has had this happen to them. So just like you said, to bring it to a modern way of doing things, because like I said, I've only been at Microsoft for 1.5 years MSDN in the past, and from the outside looking, like on the outside, it never really was the best place, because you would always have to scroll up and down and try to figure out, you know, the context of the thread and things like that, as opposed to Stack Overflow. You have like that conversational context that, you know, that you can easily see, hey, is this really relevant or not? And then especially if on MSDN, you know, anybody can mark a post as answered, and then somebody could come up and try that answer, and then it doesn't even work for them. So, you know, people be like, you know, hey, what happened here? Like, this is an answer and it doesn't even work for me.
Right.
So.
Now, Ryan, I remember there used to be MSDN for, I would say, developer-oriented questions. And then we used to have TechNet for more IT-related questions.
Oh, God, I forgot about TechNet.
Right? So I haven't gone back to recently to see if TechNet still exists. But how are
it
we,
does.
How are we, is this kind of a blend for both these audiences that we're talking about over here?
I think it will be, because when you, so when we started Q&A, we wanted to serve our Azure customers. So we started to do a pilot where only particular service areas would, you know, come into the fold, just to, you know, get that learning experience and be able to make improvements before the GA availability. So we started out with like UWP, you know, dev test labs, and Azure Web Apps. So just to, you know, just to pilot. So right now, what's on Q&A is basically all of the Azure related services. There's still WP is out there, so folks that, you know, that has WP related questions can go to Q&A and then ask those questions. And then as this snowball gets bigger and bigger, we'll add more and more services. And that's the great thing about the tagging, because we can say, you know, we can, or PGs can say, hey, I want to start using Q&A for my customers. And then all we have to do is just implement the certain tags that they want to use. And then they can all of a sudden migrate off of Technic or older MSDN, because there are some services that still use MSDN, but they can migrate from those platforms over to Q&A with ease.
So that raises an interesting question. So echo Sajid, I can't remember if TechNet's even there. I know MSDN is still there as a thing, right? Yeah. Is the content actually getting migrated over? Does Q&A index the MSDN content, or am I sort of now stuck as somebody that has a question having to check both places?
No, you don't have to check both places. So if your question is related to Azure, you can start to type in like what the title of your question would be. And then what Q&A does is that it will actually source not responses within the platform, but also source responses from MSDN. So like all those, you know, threads that have been marked as answered and have been helpful to customers, they actually come over. So you can actually click on that thread and be directed back to MSDN to see if that solution actually works for you. And then if it doesn't, you can just simply post your question on Q&A and then let the broader community tag in and help you out.
So if I'm following you right, then I don't really have to care where my question might be ultimately or my answer might be. I just go to Q&A, start asking my question. If it happens to be answered in the MSDN content, then it'll get pulled in. If not, I just start fresh, just like I would anyway. I don't even have to think about it. I should just be going to Q&A.
Exactly. To start with. Yep, exactly.
Okay. Makes sense. Now, Ryan, when you onboard one of these PGs or services into Q&A, do you get some sort of commitment from the PG in terms of the SLA for answering questions for that particular service?
Well, I can speak for Azure CXP. We have our own internal SLA where we want to provide quality answers to the customer within a short period of time. Now, I can speak for the folks on WP or Teams or other services that has onboarded onto Q&A that's outside of the Azure org. But I can tell you that for our standpoint, what we do is that we do talk to the PGs and we do want to enter in an agreement where, it isn't just us or the community, answering the questions, but, to involve be a great tool for gaining feedback, to gaining insights into how folks are using Azure and the roadblocks that they're hitting, so that they can make the product essentially better.
Good. So from an end user perspective, one who's looking to find answers to a question, they can safely go to Q&A. Because under the covers, you are going to be querying these other data sources. You're kind of, in a way, aggregating some of what is already there so that we don't have to go hunt those answers around. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is there some kind of context? Is there some more intelligence involved with sourcing those answers from these other systems? Or are you just looking for, keywords blindly? And I guess I'm trying to understand is, would a Bing search do the same thing as Q&A?
As far as those details, I'm not sure if it's, like a machine learning or if it's just like contextual keywords or tagging. Have to speak to our team with regards to that. But what I can tell you is that, even on those posted questions that we will show like relevant questions that may pertain to, to the question being asked. Very similar to Stack Overflow, right? So you got your main question right there in front of you, and then off to the right, you have those, hey, here's some other related questions. So those folks that are, searching Bing and then hit a question that's on Q&A, if it's not 100% what they're looking for, then maybe on the side, a relevant question may have been asked that gets them a little closer to what they're looking for.
Got it. Thank you.
One of the things that you and I were talking about this capabilities-wise previously, Ryan, was you were telling me that the other thing that Q&A brings is the ability to have private conversations, which in this day and age is huge because in the on-premises world, no matter what information you share with me, I can't see your data on-premises, right? But in the cloud world, if you're talking to a Microsoft resource, we have the ability to see their, platform telemetry, the platform data for their, what they've deployed. But I have to have a subscription. I have to have a resource name. I have to have something to look for, right? If I go looking for everything that Ryan Hill, all Ryan Hills in Azure, I expect there's more than one of you.
And
so you were sort of telling me that Q&A bring one of the big things Q&A brings is the ability to have those private conversations. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So this is still in preview, private preview, as we're still testing it. But what that private conversation is going to bring is that as a moderator, myself being a moderator, if I need to gain insights into that limit, then I send you a private comment that only you can see, where I can ask, hey, what's your application ID? So then I can look up those telemetry logs and your subscription ID and be able to see, hey, what region are you deploying to? What SKU size are you using? Are you using a Windows app plan or a Linux app plan? And then I can begin to replicate or try to reproduce the issue that you as a customer is encountering. So, and that the advantage of that is that currently what we do is that if we need to, gain that information, we will either ask the customer to kind of, obfuscate their app name and their subscription ID, or we just had them send us an email to include that information. Takes that loop out of the picture, and it becomes a two-way conversation on, between the moderator and the customer to be able to have that interaction without having to go through email or go out of the loop, right?
Yeah, that's great. That really gives you all the as moderators the ability to really look directly at their problem. You're not guessing at the config. You're not guessing at what the data says about their deployment. Like, you're seeing the actual configuration. You're seeing the actual data, right? Which is the same thing I do in my daily life as well, right? And I'd die without that information, right? Yeah. If I didn't have that, I would not be anywhere near as effective. So this will be a huge step forward for y'all in terms of your effectiveness.
Exactly. And to Sujeet's news point, with the advancements or with the improvements that are being made into templates, what that does is that it be able to say, okay, this person is using a Linux function app that is based in PHP, and then we'll be able to look up a template and deploy that resource immediately, and then try to start working on reproducing the issue. Instead of wasting time trying to, get that information over email, so now I have to create a resource group and I have to create a new app function and throw some code in there, and then maybe hopefully reproduce the issue effectively. So I can't wait until this private messaging conversation view, this private view comes to our customers. I'm so looking forward to it.
And so Ryan, I'm wondering, from an overall Azure support perspective, is the message here that, go to Q&A first, see what that has to offer, and if that's not satisfactory, then you would the option to open up a support ticket? Is that the kind of flow, or how does it fit into the overall Azure support system?
Yeah, so if it is a case in point, like I'll share details with you right now. A customer was having an issue with a function app that they want to use Python 3.7, but the runtime is used in 3.6. So I had to, and then another person commented saying, "Hey, I'm having the same issue." So at that point, it's like, okay, now you have to send me details, and then I publish a support ticket for those two customers, because these two customers are having a very similar issue, and I need to hand this off to support engineers so they can see, okay, is this a platform issue or is something else going on, right? So, and that's what, that's what coming to Q&A garners you. It's that first class citizen, right? You can't do this on Stack Overflow. While Stack Overflow is a great community and what they have established over there is fantastic, but what you get from Q&A is that you get actual, Microsoft engineers seeing the problem, seeing the issues, and then if it needs to be elevated to a support request, then we can do that.
Got it. So you're kind of like almost crowdsourcing the problem there in Q&A. So if there's other people that have the same issue, that kind of raises the profile of that issue inside of the PG, and they can work on it accordingly.
Exactly. And really, I just want to encourage everybody to check out Q&A. And if you have, issues related to Azure, ask your questions there. I mean, you can still ask your questions over on Stack Overflow. There's been plenty of times where I've seen a question posted on Q&A and then that same question posted on Stack Overflow, because you want as many eyes to see your problem as possible so that you can, so that you can get a solution. But Q&A allows us to be able to have that, to give our customers that first class experience when it comes to, like Evan said, being able to pull that telemetry data, right out the back through the private messaging model that will be coming out, to be able to tag your question across multiple service areas if you have that issue, where this web app with AD integration and storage, be able to get more eyes and more engineers, as well as the broader community to be able to help point you in the right direction. So it's a great platform, and it is a growing platform. So if you have feedback, if you say, I don't really like this, send that feedback, because my team is part of the team that actually looks at that feedback and be able to say, hey, this is something that our customers are seeing. Can we, how can we push this forward so that we can address it?
Yep. All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much for sharing that, Ryan.
No problem.
Evan, if there's no more questions.
That was great. Thanks, Ryan. I think the only two other things I wanted to point out, one was, to your question, Sajid, right? So Ryan, if anybody caught it, right, Ryan's in the CXP organization, same as I am. The community team sits in there. We've got chat, there's chat work in here, there's direct delivery work. So they're super integrated in that overall process and ecosystem. The other piece is I want to point out that Ryan, he mentioned he's been with the company for a year and a half now. What he didn't mention is it's at our brand new site in Atlanta, where we are hiring like crazy. And so, we are absolutely looking for talent. So if you're down in the area, reach out and we'll certainly see what, check out what we have posted. It's a super exciting, super growing site. Love to have people. So yeah, well, Ryan, we're thrilled to have you and your Atlanta peers with the company.
Hey man, I'm super excited to be here, and I consider it a blessing to be kind of on that ground floor of that Microsoft is investing in the city that I grew up around. So super excited to be looking forward to that and being able to work with colleagues to not only gain more talent, but also to help the broader community and tech and STEM. And yeah, and if you're looking, definitely, there will be plenty of job postings. I guarantee it.
Great. Cool. Awesome. Thank you, Ryan, for coming on. Sajid, any last questions?
No, that's it. Thanks. Send us any links if you have, Ryan, you know, especially to the Q&A, of course, and specific links to the job postings. If you want to send them over to me, I can put them along with the recording when we publish the show.
Sounds great.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, man.
Take care.
Y'all have a good one. Appreciate the invite.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.